With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Folks, we are pleased to have New Orleans Police Superintendent Sean Ferguson here. We know that he's very busy. We've shuffled around our schedules. I'm a big fan, and of course, I'm a fan of the first responder community. I think that goes without saying. Chief, there's been a lot of different things happening recently in the city, but just yesterday, I believe, you guys announced a two-year plan to try and make New Orleans one of the safest cities. I know that's everyone's challenge in their own respective areas, and they attempt to do so. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, so I mean, since I've been in this position, we've been doing our assessing, evaluating, and actually going back to April or May, we actually had this document put together, but we wanted to make sure we vetted internally. We wanted to, like, when we went through the consent decree, when the consent decree was first established, we were pretty much just given a booklet and just trying to figure out our own way. Each commander was kind of like trying to figure out their own way to get through this. But when we created that compliance bureau that actually took ownership of that document and began to direct us as to how we should get through this and own these paragraphs, we were able to make some motion, some progress with that. So with this particular document, with our strategic plan, we kind of looked at it the same way. These six goals, we create a goal champion for each goal where that commander or deputy chief or whomever takes ownership of that particular goal and help direct us as a department to achieve each and every one of these goals as best as possible.
So what you've done is you've institutionalized ownership internally and have somebody with their eye on whether there's progress made or not, and obviously or hopefully as well that they're able to speak honestly with amongst everyone in the meeting. That's the appreciation I have of your approach thus far. Point out the blisters.
Absolutely.
Point out the sores, the pimples.
But
you know, if there are successes, we'll talk about that as well.
Absolutely. You know, and we identify if there's some shortcomings, we're going to discuss those as well. Maybe we could take another approach. Maybe this goal wasn't quite what we thought it would be. Maybe we could take another direction with that.
Right. It seems to me that one of the things that you have accomplished is a sense of exigency, that, you know, there's urgency here, that, you know, we don't want to just take all this time. We need to be looking at it all the time. And as you just pointed out, if we need to shift directions, we're not afraid of change. We don't want to be afraid of change. We want to stand the results and look them dead in the eye. And if they're good, they're good. If they're not, we got to figure out how to make them better.
Same approach we take with the community and each and every aspect of what it is that we are doing. We welcome the difficult conversations. We want to know how the public feel, good, bad, or indifferent, so that we can make sure that we are working together. And the basis of this plan is working together, not just with our federal, state, and local partners or with the criminal justice partners, but with the community as well.
I think one of the issues that y'all have outlined, and correct me if I'm wrong, in the six-point plan is juvenile crime's one of them, is it not?
Yeah, so with the juvenile crime, our focus is to address crime, period.
Right.
Specifically violent crime, no specific approach on, hey, we're going to just look at juvenile crime only. We're looking at anyone, and we want to address anyone who commits any crime. But also, by deepening our community enrichment with our community, our relationship with our community, we can reach out to those juveniles. Our approach is to try to reach the juveniles and let them know there are better choices. There's more opportunity out there for them before they go or veer onto the wrong path.
So, you know, taking ownership of all crime and looking at just violent crime as a general category, whether it be committed by an adult or committed by a juvenile, in the end is of no moment, is it? I mean, it's still a violent crime statistic.
Absolutely.
and who the perp is, the perp is. He or she is what it is, and it ain't going to change.
And that is our view. That is our view. No matter who that criminal is, no matter the age, race, sex, or whatever, we're going to address that criminal.
Recently, there's been an issue that came out of juvenile court, and I kind of look at it from this perspective first. I feel for the men and women of the department because they have successfully reached an arrest of an impact violator.
Yes.
Same thing. Adult, juvenile, doesn't matter. It's an impact violator. You're sticking a gun in somebody's face and you're telling them, I'm going to hurt you badly. If anyone out there thinks that's not an impact violator, please correct me.
Right, right. It is demoralizing to the officers sometimes.
I mean, I feel for them because, you know, and you've been out there long enough to know, you don't think about, you know, whether or not your longevity in life, you know, whether or not it's going to be cut short. Because if you did, you'd probably go crazy in this business, right?
Yes, yes.
So
absolutely.
You don't think about it. But by the same token, you know that if there's still these guys that are the impact players that are getting released and you're going to have to confront them again, they're less likely or more likely, I should say, to be less compliant than they were the previous time.
Bolder and brazen. That's what it amounts to. They become very bolder. If they see there are no consequences to their actions, they fear nothing.
And I think sometimes the listening audience, the general public, and I don't know if you get that same feeling, they don't really connect those dots all the time.
No,
And I don't think they really understand the frustration of that frontline officer, that frontline supervisor, you know, that are risking their lives, no matter how old these kids are, or you know, whether they're juveniles or adults, that today could be their day.
Absolutely. And it has been a demoralizing factor for many officers, but we have to keep them motivated and identify ways of letting them know that, you know, we still have a job. There's still an oath that we took. Regardless of everything else that goes on, we still have to keep doing our part in this cycle.
So the first point is violent crime, obviously. And internally, y'all are setting up the strategies to take ownership of all crime.
Yes.
And what else are you doing in that realm?
So with the violent crime, I mean, what I like for everyone to realize is that I am from within the department. So a lot of the success, a lot of the progression that we have made thus far with the department, I was a part of that. So I know that we are already on the right path. So now it is all about mastering our craft, being more efficient, being more effective at what it is that we're doing. You know, we're going into this fourth year of double-digit reduction in armed robbery. We're on the verge of breaking the record of the 47-year low of last year of homicides. We may be making this the 48-year low of homicides, but we're doing it more effectively by working with our partners at the local, state, and federal levels and trying to bring in, make sure we tie in the district attorney's office. We're getting good cases, identifying the right individuals. So in doing these violent crimes, we're not just looking at the perpetrator. We're not just looking at the victim. We're looking at the associates, too, so we can hopefully prevent any further retaliatory shootings or incidents, period.
So much the same approach that I always kind of talked about. Your arrests are only as good as a prosecutor's successful prosecution, right?
And it's quality, not quantity. It's all about the quality of that arrest.
And I mean, I used to like to term it this way: the selective incapacitation of the impact criminal. Because you know, and addressing your resources there. When you talk about the associates, once you get into an impact guy and The easiest path now is to look at the associates.
Yes, absolutely.
Because maybe half of the evidence you have on the target is going to be applicable to the associate as well.
Yes, yes.
One of the things you mentioned, I think, as part of the six-point plan was the utilization of technology.
Yes.
When we come back from the break, we'll pick it up there and talking about technology and the important role that it serves in increasing arrest rates and
yes,
things of that nature and the efficiency within the department. We're with Superintendent Sean Ferguson from the NOPD. We'll be right back. Stay with us. We're back. We're talking to New Orleans Police Superintendent Sean Ferguson about a recently announced two-year plan, strategic plan. Six categories of that plan. We've talked about violent crime. Let's talk about technology. You mentioned that. That plays an important role, I think, in a lot of forward-leaning law enforcement organizations across the country.
Absolutely. And it's not just about the technology to fight crime, but also internal workers. It lifts the morale of the officers that they know they have up-to-date resources, such as our docket management system, such as the records management system, to make sure we can streamline some of the work that they are doing, that they are effective and efficient. But the other side of it is the crime side, fighting side, getting these data analysts. My hope is to get an analyst in every district, one in homicide as well as in our Tiger units. They have been phenomenal. Prime example was we had a few weeks ago, we had 14 individuals shot on the weekend, six individuals in one vehicle at City Park and Canal Street, one deceased in that vehicle. Our data analyst came in that weekend and tied in with homicide. By Sunday, the individual was identified. By Monday, the individual had been located and arrested. So we're looking at some software that can help our analysts that we do have now, that can help them what would usually have taken 24 to 48 hours to package up something for a detective. They can do within a couple of hours while the detectives are out on the street, beating feet on the street, because you still, at the end of the day, have to do some old-school policing, which is connecting with the community, connecting with the people that are out there, and get from behind that desk. So that allows those detectives to go out there and do the old-school policing, and then they can come back to those packages, and they can tie everything in together.
You know, that intelligence-led policing model, the collection of the intelligence, the data, being able to manage, massage, and manipulate the data, meaning, connecting dots with it, looking at relational analyses and stuff like that is what you're talking about, of the data analysts on the back end, is incredibly important. And it helps actually take away a lot of the work that the frontline officer investigator has to do. Because as you said, you create these efficiencies by having them do that in the background and hand over a packet saying, you may want to consider this, 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 and this. We see your relationship develop there.
Yes.
This guy kind of fits the description. He's a known associate. Meanwhile, the detective can still be out on the street beating the bushes looking for additional witnesses.
Absolutely. And that's what it comes down to. And that holistic approach, that collaborative approach, that means the world. Not just to our citizens, because they can see now that we are actually working and out there in the streets working with them, but it means the world to the investigator and the officers that they are actually being equipped with the right resources to get their job done.
Chief, one of the things I know that you want to control your own destiny on is a DNA lab. It's not that the state police DNA lab's a bad lab. It's not. It's a good lab. But,
right, absolutely.
But it's not your lab.
And that's what it comes down to.
And you want to control your own destiny in that respect to be able to make sure that your cases are the priority cases. Because for them, all cases are priority. And it's hard to politically resolve those issues up there.
Yes.
And I that's being fair to them. I understand a ticklish position, but a department your size, a city this size, it's something that you guys should definitely have.
Yes, and the mayor has been working with us as well as our CAO. Right now, we have the plan drafted for our new crime lab, which should be breaking ground by the end of this year. And we're thinking another 18 months before that is complete. And in it, there is a section specifically assigned to DNA testing. And we're looking forward to that. We're looking forward to hopefully building into that. And once we get into that, be able to build outward from there.
So that, actually, I think, isn't there FEMA money or something that's associated
with that? FEMA money that has been set aside for, as well as some money that the city would still have to put with that.
Yeah, and I think that would go a long way in a lot of these different cases. I mean, when we first started in it, we weren't doing a lot of touch DNA. Now you're doing touch DNA.
Yes.
It moved to weapons. It moved to other evidence that you initially were not able to do. And I think I'm not sure if y'all still are able to do any of that because of the constraints of of so many people calling upon the limited resources of the state police in that regard, because it's not, it's a costly proposition. Everyone thinks DNA is easy. No. To stay accredited is a task and has a cost.
Yes, it does. It really does. I mean, I can tell you, nearly every week I'm receiving something from Crime Now to make sure that we're providing the right resources to make sure that we are accredited and maintain our accreditation as well.
Because even though someone else's lab is doing it for you, the way that you're handling the stuff, the validation, everything else, you have to keep all of that in order to maintain your accreditation.
Yes.
A lot of folks don't realize this is almost like running the Food and Drug Administration lab where you've got all of this science and you've got to document everything. For the efficacy of that and being able to present that evidence in court.
Absolutely.
Yep. One of the things that a lot of folks are confused about is this consent decree. So where are we and where do we hope to be and what's your goal as it relates to this? Because I know the consent decree is one of the 6 points of this plan.
Yes.
And there's a lot of negatives out there about that is from a perception standpoint.
Yes. So we're pretty much fully compliant. We had a couple of check marks that we still benchmarks we needed to check off on. Supervision, which I think we are fairly close to that. Supervision, bias-free policing is another. We're still having the conversation as to how you really quantify that.
When you figure that one out, let me know.
Yeah, one of the gauges that I use to measure this is to look at the fact our complaints, officer-involved complaints, they're down. Use of forces are down. You don't see the community in an uproar with regards to that the officers are doing anything. There's a trend or there's a certain pattern that or culture that the officers are doing anything that is like causing or creating any type of biases. So those couple of things are the things that we're dealing
with. A lot of that
is
subjective too. I mean, it's kind of, and that's a difficult thing to quantify, right?
Yes, yeah. And where we are now, my goal is to be at the end of this year, no later than the beginning of next year, to be in full and substantial compliance. And I think we have put ourselves in a great position where we can sustain this compliance beyond a consent decree.
Once you reach that status, there's a follow-up period.
Yes,
as I recall, that you're not rid of. Not that I'm trying to say anything negative about it, but you're not rid of them.
and that is why in my strategic plan you see that I have the ending date of 2021, or the ending year of 2021. That's because there is a 2-year monitoring phase at the end of this process, and that is when we consider ourselves completely off of the consent decree.
And that requires y'all to generate certain reports in a certain way to
maintain
forward
and
to
prove
that
we're sustaining.
Forward to the monitor for them to evaluate, look at. They still participate in meetings with y'all,
absolutely.
Maybe not as frequently.
They're still a part of it.
They're still entrenched
in the department and making sure that we are doing what it is that we're supposed to be doing.
And they want to make sure that whatever the agreed upon benchmarks are, that they can y'all continue to hit those benchmarks during that period of time.
Yes, and the Professional Standards and Accountability Bureau has been phenomenal with that. We have an audit team in there. There's a monthly audit of everything that is that we are doing, from the bias-free policing, from stop and frisk, to make sure that we're compliant with what it is that we agree to be, or who we agree to be from the beginning.
And the goal is, when you're looking and you want to give them the benefit of the doubt, meaning the federal monitors, is that the cultural change is established, it's alive and well, and it's ongoing.
And it's ongoing, and it will continue to be so. We will not go backwards, and that's something I've been saying from day one. We will not go backwards. We will continue to progress forward. We are that model for constitutional policing, 21st century constitutional policing. We continue to press forward as such.
Yeah, I mean, because if you think about it, if you did move back, you've wasted a lot of time, resource, frustration, energy.
And it's a disappointment to our community.
Yeah, public trust.
Yes.
You got to manage and massage that. Yes. Very carefully, because once you've lost it and you know, and NOPD's gone through the trials and tribulations of that. You're yes. working three times harder to get it back.
Yes, absolutely. And that's the most important reason why we cannot go backwards. Community trust, and we can't do it without them.
All right. When we come back, we'll continue through the list of the six objectives relative to this new two-year plan with Superintendent Sean Ferguson of the NOPD. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back with Superintendent Sean Ferguson of the NOPD. Let's go to Dan on line one. What say you, Dan?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good. You?
I was just wondering, what's the policy, and then what is the law on when you arrest someone that you take their DNA? And also, what is the policy, and then what is the law on giving the medication to prisoners once you've arrested them?
Medication meaning what?
Well, like if they're taking some type of a, you know, if they're schizophrenic or whatever.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no problem. So taking blood, you get a warrant.
You get a warrant for that. Yeah. Bottom line, you get a warrant for that. There's no just taking anyone's DNA without anyone. Buccal swab, saliva, any of that. You have to have a warrant for that.
Yeah.
Inducing anyone with any type of medication, we don't do that. I mean, most
that's
we
done
do.
By the sheriff.
Yeah, by the sheriff.
Yeah, and I can tell you from personal experience, they have folks there that are trained and
medical staff,
and they look at and get access to their medical records as quickly as possible, and try to get access to whatever the medication that they need, whether they're diabetic or it's mental illness medicine or whatever it may be, yeah. And they actually prescribe that through the medical ward there as well. It's always a challenge because you never know how that individual presents themselves at that time. Sometimes they're coherent, sometimes they're completely and totally incoherent, and you're trying to drag information out of them, and it's not always easy. So, Chief, as we make our way through this list, one of the things is resources, and we talked about on the technology side, DNA, but there are other resources beyond that, correct?
Yes. I mean, vehicles is one obstacle in which we're running into now. You know, our vehicles are operating 24/7 at the districts. So that's something that we've actually gone in front of the council about with the 3 mil. We were actually trying to get more vehicles, not just for police, fire, and EMS. We all need that. That's one of our major resources that we are really down in.
You can't answer a call if you don't have a reliable mode of transportation, right?
Right, right. And you know, then next is the facilities. Start to build up some of these facilities, like the crime lab. You know, we already have in the works, hopefully get another 4th District station. You know, those things.
Do you still have facilities that have not been brought up, to full use since Katrina?
No, I mean, our fire range is the main thing.
Right.
That is the number one thing that we're looking at, and that is something I've been preaching
that,
about.
That was destroyed, daily. As I recall.
Totally destroyed. Totally. I mean, and I won't say totally. The shell is there.
Right.
And it can be renovated from within with that shell. The wall still meets the standard requirements. Right. Of the federal government, if we were to redo that. And that is something we actually just had a tour of that last week, just to put some eyes on it so people can really understand the effect of what it is that we're missing. We're still going to St. Tammany Parish. We're still going to Plaquemines Parish to qualify and certify many of our officers and recruits. So that becomes a burden at a time, especially when we have to move at those various agencies call when they say they need their facility, then we have to get out the way. So
yeah, you have limited access.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's the same with the utilizing other people's crime lab.
Yes.
You're second in line always. That's the best position you're going to get is second.
Yes.
You may be third, fourth, fifth, or sixth, depending on the demands and the requests made from a lot of different agencies. We did that for a period of time when we lost our range and was trying to build a new range, and thankfully, Plaquemines and St. Tammany and others have stood up, and it's good to have well-intentioned brothers and sisters in law enforcement.
I tell you, I thank them every day because they have really, really been. Don't get me wrong; they have not been just pushing us out and say, "Hey, we need this facility."
No, they don't.
They don't do that to us. No, not at all. But they have really been working with us.
Yeah, it's just more. It's more scheduling, and then if you have a desire to do more, tactically and things of that nature for tactical operations and training. It's hard when you're having to beg and borrow other people's facilities in order to do that, as opposed to, you know, spending your dime, investing in your own resource and making sure that you're able to do that. Because, you know, we found that we end up going to the range a lot more when we control the range.
I was about to say that. And that is another one of those little things.
It all goes
to
training.
To the officers and give them, build up the morale, help develop their training even more so.
So let's talk about the other items, strategic collaboration. Obviously, your partners, there are many. Yes. There are many policing agencies within the city of New Orleans. When you think about the levee board, the harbor police, and although they're not big departments, but 20 guys here, 30 guys there, collaboration can make a big difference.
Yeah, let me tell you, they have been phenomenal. Just yesterday, the 3rd District was informing me about their collaboration with the levee board and how they've been working hand-in-hand with some of their deployment. With the auto burglaries that we've seen, the rash of auto burglaries in that Lakeview area, the levee board has taken ownership of some patrol area with our 3rd District, as well as some other local partners that are actually just working with us. And that goes a lot. That goes a long way, especially with us not having the manpower that we would like to have to push more deployment out. So we have to be smarter about this. So collaboration is one of the smartest ways that we could be.
So that force multiplier is huge. You still have the relationship with the Louisiana State Police. Are their numbers down here in the city, or is it about the same?
Let me tell you, Captain Burns, Dean has been phenomenal in working with Commander Baldessaro down there in the 8th District. They are attending our meetings every week and making sure that they are abreast daily of what is going on down in the 8th District. So the numbers are pretty much still the same, and they still have their troopers that come in for special events and help us with the very special events that we have going on. And even now, take it to the next level, to the federal level. The FBI, ATF, as well as the DA, they have really, really been working with us as well and making sure that we have those solid cases. And all of that ties into the district attorney's office as well. We get these cases together, the district attorney's office is embedded with us to make sure that we have the right case in identifying, locating, and arresting the right individuals, and that's been key
and those
to our success.
Those guys have a lot of the technology that's coming down the pipe right now, too. The improvements and same, they provide a lot of the training as well.
Yes.
So it's always good to have, you know, the FBI, DEA, and ATF in particular with gun traces and everything else that goes along there, because a gun has a life.
Yes.
And you know, the sooner you can get your hands around that information, you can figure out a lot of different things.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Let's go to line 2, talk to Steve. What say you, Steve?
Hey, Sheriff, Chief Persman, how you guys doing?
Good, you.
Hey, Chief, I want to ask you, I'm a business owner in the city, and I got a lot of friends that are deputies within the department, and I wanted to ask you about morale within the department when it comes to deputies making arrests, getting violent offenders back in jail, and then the jail just turn around and release them with the revolving door at OPP. Can you talk about that a little bit, Chief?
Okay. So just, you know, just a little while ago, we were just speaking about that. You know, it can be demoralizing. It is my responsibility, our deputy chiefs, as well as the supervisors, to make sure that our officers maintain a focus on what it is that we are sworn to do. Some things we just cannot control. But what we can control, we will control. It is demoralizing, but we have to keep fighting the fight, more or less, to make sure we identify the right individuals.
I think it's important to point out, you correct me if I'm wrong,
mm-hmm.
there's a lot more back-channel communications that goes on about that than you're going to ever see on the front end, because there are the political sensitivities. You don't want to get into a pissing contest publicly, necessarily, all the time. But I'm confident there are a lot of back channel
conversations. There are a lot of back channel conversations. Those are one of those things I was alluding to with that is beyond our control.
Mm-hmm.
So we just keep.
But it doesn't mean you don't call and give someone your opinion and say, "Hey,
you have to. You have to. You have to let them know what it is, the unintended consequences that they are creating for the boots on the ground when they have their certain agendas that they are pushing out."
And it's a delicate balance. I mean, you know, and I try to be respectful of all the agencies. I didn't always do a good job of that. I mean, you saw some of my press conferences. Sometimes I went astray. But it's all well intentioned, because I know I see in your eyes and in your heart the feelings that you have for the men and women of the department and the safety security of them, and I'm sure you're burdened with what I was burdened with as well, going home every night and hoping that everyone that works for me and with me goes home every night safe, you know, to their family.
Absolutely. That's the number one goal. When you go out to these roll calls, asking, make sure they do everything within their means to go home the same way in which they came in to work at the beginning of their shift.
All right, we got to get to a break. We'll be right back. Stay with us. We're back with NOPD Superintendent Sean Ferguson. We're talking about the two-year strategic plan. We've covered violent crime, technology, consent decree, resources, strategic collaboration. Last on the list, and very important, community engagement, Chief.
Yep, community engagement. I mean, we cannot do anything without the community. I know definitely the community cannot do anything without us. And it starts with that trust. And we have to have that trust and safety from within to be able to explore it outside. And our biggest thing is trying to reach out to our kids. I think that is a big part of our community engagement, being able to let them know that there are better options, there are other opportunities in life for them, but they just have to see it. Seeing is believing. So we went back to the old school of the National PALs, Police Athletic. It used to be Police Athletic, but now it's Police Activity Leagues. We're trying to create this program for mentorship for the kids. I would like to see it grow one day into being an actual cadet program, which could one day not just teach these kids about today for tomorrow, but also that could possibly be our breeding ground for recruitment. If we can build it up far enough.
Are y'all working with the school systems?
Yes, we've been working with the school system. We're working with NORD as well.
Awesome. Let me thank you for coming in. Always enjoy talking
thank you for having you
and having you explain what's going on. This is a new announcement. We are excited to hear about it, and we wish you the best. And all of the men and women of the NOPD, we wish them the best as well.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, want to win a cool grant in a free cash giveaway contest? Now's your chance. The code word this hour is SHUFFLE. Text SHUFFLE to 72881 at 72881. Listen for the next code word right before the top of the hour every hour, now through 4 p.m. Don't miss your chance to win $1,000 eight times a day in our Intercom National Cash Contest. Good luck from all of us at WWL. We never charge for text, but individual plan text and data rates do apply. And remember, please don't text and drive. Scoots up next. Stay tuned.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.